to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm interviewing Steve Paralini, the novel doctor. Steve has been an editor for over 20 years, working on everything from curriculum to study guides to self-help books to fiction. He is a freelance editor, collaborating with a variety of publishing houses and individuals on books of all kinds. He's also recently done my editorial review for Pentecost, my first thriller novel. So welcome, Steve.
It's good to be here.
Yes, thanks ever so much for coming on and fitting me into your busy schedule.
Oh, no problem at all. It's my schedule. I can make it up as I go, so I can make the time for this.
Good point. So maybe you could start by telling us, what exactly does an editor do anyway? Because, you know, many people have kind of preconceptions. So maybe you could tell us a bit more about your working day.
Well, in my situation, I'm a freelance editor, so I set my own schedule in terms of when I edit. As far as what I do, that's dependent on the projects that come to me. But, you know, it's like any other freelance work. I get up when I want to or when I have to, and then, you know, spend a lot of time reading. I think I spend more time reading than anything else. Manuscripts, obviously, spending time getting to know those and learning the writer's voice. That's the first thing I want to do. And then eventually I get to the point where I sit down and I need to make the hard decisions about what it is I'm seeing in the work. But before any of that happens, the way I approach it, I tend to use my Kindle more than anything else because it's a nice portable device, easy to use in restaurants where I often sit down at lunchtime and do reading. And I will upload the manuscript of the author I'm working on to the Kindle, and I'll sit down and I'll read through it as if it's a real book. I try to pretend, I have to read kind of on two levels at the beginning. One, as a reader, just to imagine how good is this as it stands now. And then, of course, as an editor, trying to think about what things am I going to make notes on later. So that's the first step I take, is just to read it as if I'm the end user. And sometimes I'm pleasantly surprised and find that it's in great shape and it's going to be more fun just tweaking little things. Other times it looks like there's a lot of work that needs to be done. But that's kind of how I approach it. I read it first, just to pretend like I bought this off the shelf at Barnes & Noble or Borders. And then the editing part itself, you know, my day, since it's mine, I kind of approach the editing in late afternoon. For some reason, the tiredest part of the day, I sit down and start to work on editing somebody's book. But I could sit down for probably 3 or 4 hours at a time and just go through and make notes at that point. After I've been through it once, the second time through, I'm looking on the computer at the same file, going through and making notes about what big picture stuff I see. Maybe there's some details that I happen to find along the way that weren't, that didn't match either the author's voice or the plot or the character, whatever it is. All those notes just go in a separate file initially. And depending on the kind of editing that I'm doing for that particular author, I'll either go through the manuscript and make notes and turn on the track changes on Word and just make everything very visible to the author right there. Or I'll just have a separate file, like I did with yours, where I have the editorial notes all kind of lined up, going through the big picture on 8 to 10 pages or 6 pages, whatever it takes to make all the notes of what I think needs to be worked on. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, no, that's really fascinating.
I probably ramble far too much about any of these things because I do like to talk sometimes.
No, and do you know what comes to mind from that is, and of course, after you did my editorial review and I went through it and I found a whole stack more things as well as what you had given me, plus all the, you know, punctuation and things like that. But can an edit ever really be finished? As in, we could be going backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards forever. Is there ever a point when a book is finished unless, you know, someone just says, yep, it's done now?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and you know, you can answer two ways. In one way, you can say, no, it's never finished, and the truth is it's not. When you hand it off even to the printer after all of the editing is done, there's that unknown factor of the reader, and they really finish the book with you. I mean, they're the part that's the you can't control that part. But as far as the editing that you can do as a writer, as you're going through, you have to just decide, you know what, I think this is as good as I'm going to get it, and then I'm going to trust somebody else to do the next step, whatever that might be. And what I do for publishers, this might help you get a picture of what it looks like on the editorial side. If we have a manuscript coming from an author, and they've done their best, which means probably three or four drafts, probably going through their crit partners, you know, talking to all the people that they trust, getting their opinions, maybe including a freelance editor like myself to get advice. So they've gone through that process, and they've got sort of their final version of what they think is great. That goes to the publisher who's requested that book or is contacted that book. It's still going to go through some rounds of editing. At that point, and this is through traditional publishing, and we can talk about self-publishing in a different context, but in traditional publishing, it's going to go to the publishing house. Mm-hmm. They're going to assign an editor to that project from their house, or they might even use a freelancer like me, and they will say, here's the book. After all this work's been done, and it's in great shape, and the author probably believes it's either the best thing ever or it's horrible because they're so stressed about how hard it was to get to that point. And then that editor goes through with what is called a macro edit. I know one of your questions here, we'll get to it in a minute, but that's the big picture edit. It's really a sense of what I did for you, but even on a broader scale and more details, where we say, here's what works, here's what I think could be better, here's some character stuff that's not quite right, here's a plot issue here or there, whatever it is. And again, it's just a new set of eyes seeing what you've seen over and over again. Mm. Someone who may have a pretty good sense of how that kind of book works, or maybe how the industry works, or what the publisher's looking for. And then when that's done, the author goes back, makes those changes as they choose, comes back again and goes to the line editor. So there's another editing round there. And all those little things like the punctuation marks, and if you don't catch those, then there's another level, the copy editor, who will do those, or the proofreader in a final analysis. So there's like four levels even after you're done with it. So are you ever done with it? When you say you are, and you hope that, you know, that it's that you're happy with it. I think that to me is the best answer. If you feel really content with it, there's going to be that kind of conflict of I'm happy with it, but I'm not. Mm. I think everyone's going to, if you're a perfectionist, and a lot of writers are, you're going to say, you know, this is good, but boy, I saw some things when I read it last night I really wish I could go back and fix. That's where you decide, do you want to put any more time into it? It's time for the next book.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. And I don't know if you know Seth Godin, marketing guy, you know, he talks about shipping. You've got to get it out the door at some point, right, or you are, you know, you're not an author. You're a writer, basically, forever. You're just going to be writing it and writing it. So, no, that's great. I also wondered on, and this was another question I didn't actually put on my list, but do you have like a checklist when you read genre fiction? So mine is a thriller. You know, there's obviously romance, there's horror, you know, is there like a checklist or something that you would say things have to conform to certain dimensions to be in a certain genre?
Well, if there is, somebody should send it to me so I can use it. No, I don't know of a checklist. I may be an anomaly in some ways. I work kind of by the seat of my pants in a lot of this editing process. I love story above all else. And to me, story is kind of, if you don't have a great story, it doesn't matter what you're doing in the genre. You could sort of put all the pieces together and make it look good. But if the story's not great, if the characters aren't compelling and moving in some direction, it doesn't work. So is there a checklist? There may be some things that other editors use that they go through. It's got to have this kind of build up. I mean, if you look at how movie scripts are done, you can go through and read all the guides on how to write a movie. And in every case, they say, here's your tension, here's all the different, I don't remember the terms because I haven't written a script in a while, but, you know, the analysis there is you could point out exactly where the various points of tension and conflict happen in the story, and they're at 15 minutes in and at 45 minutes in, you can actually almost calculate it. I don't know that that's the same case for books. Genre books that have that sort of build up, I'm reading one now by a fairly well-known author, and it's for, I'm doing a big picture edit for him. And it's following what feels like a pattern to me. I mean, there's the things are looking good. Uh-oh, things are looking bad. Now things are looking good again. It's that, you know, building tension, raising the stakes. And it fits for the genre. It's a thriller. It's a political thriller. But is there a checklist? No. For me, it's instinct. And I tend to follow what feels right in terms of the pacing. That's the hardest thing to, you couldn't put that on a checklist. I mean, you could say all the parts are there, but the pacing is really a gut level thing that the author obviously needs to feel good about, but the editor, who may or may not have experience with that, would also, you know, play into that and say, I think this needs to speed up a little bit, this needs to slow down, whatever it is. It's like a musical, it's like a song in a lot of ways. Mm. Got to feel right.
No, I think that's really important. And one of the reasons, I guess, you are a professional editor is you've read hundreds of thousands of manuscripts, probably, you know, I guess, in your career.
I've read a few, yes. And, you know, of all kinds. I mean, some that have been contracted books that were in great shape coming to me, some in the early stages when I was working for a publishing house that were kind of just sent across the transom. They were, you know, the slush pile. Mm-hmm. And you read those and you think, this person's not there. And some of the thing that gut feeling comes from reading and reading and reading. You start to learn what you think an author, if an author has potential or not, whether it's in the manuscript or not, in the one that you've seen. And we've seen that a few times. I've seen it where an author comes with a manuscript that's just nowhere near, at least in our opinion, our being whatever the publishing house, you know, editorial staff, publisher would say, it's just not there. But you see something in the writer's voice. And to me, that's the thing that sells manuscripts today to agents and then on to publishing houses, is the voice, a unique voice. Is there a unique voice in every book on the shelf? No. But these days, because it's so hard to get into traditional publishing, that's the thing that's going to stand out. Mm-hmm. And you don't get there by writing one manuscript, usually. Mm-hmm. There are exceptions. Usually it's writing and writing and writing, and over the course of all that writing, you start to sort of feel a natural rhythm with the way you write. That becomes the writer's voice, and that's the part that only you can do. And so when we see those in those sort of not quite their manuscripts, we see the beginning of a voice, and that's, you want to stay in contact with those writers as a publisher.
That's great encouragement. Yeah, I really like that. So I guess one really important question is, what should writers do before they submit their book to an editor? Because so often, I guess, you must get things that are submitted that aren't where you almost have to take a top level off and then take another level off. And so what are your tips for authors before they submit to an editor?
Well, I would give this advice to just about anybody who's writing a book, whether it's their first, second, third, or fourth, whatever it is. And I've seen this happen a few times, usually in a second book. Right? If I'm working with an author whose first book they took, you know, 2, 3 years, 4 years, whatever it is to get done, they're on their second book with a 1-year deadline, whether it's from the publishing house or self-imposed. And I often see those manuscripts come through where they just haven't really taken the time to look at it from multiple perspectives. That's the best way to put it. You write your book, you know, a lot of people suggest write your book without any editorial hat on. Just write it. And I agree, that's probably the best approach. I don't do it well myself, but I think it's the way we should do it. Just write it out. Everything that you write is golden. And then the second time through, everything is suspect. Everything you've written is subject to change. And be tough on the writer. Allow that to be somebody else who wrote it and be tough on that and then go through. So that's your first draft to the second draft. That's kind of the critical piece there. Mm-hmm. Because at that point you can say, this isn't working, or it's working great, or here's what I need to do to make it work. So there's the first ride. There's the major revision that happens in the second draft. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I think it's just a matter of deciding, like, you know, when is it done, to go through a couple more drafts until you feel like you refined it the best you can. And you're probably getting a little tired of it at this point because you've seen those characters forever. And you then should go to some trusted readers. And, you know, it can be your mother or your cousin, but that's probably not the best place to go unless your mother or your cousin happen to be professional editors. And in that case, but get some reader response, just something to feedback. And they'll find things that you didn't see. Mm. And then at that point, you can say, well, there's a good response to this from sort of the general, my reader friends, people who read a lot, they liked it. Then I think it's best to go ahead and go back one more time to your manuscript. And it sounds like repetition, that's really the only way to get there. You just go over and over again until you think you've got the best possible manuscript or that you can't go any further with it. One of those two answers. Then I think it's wise in a lot of cases to go to that editor and say, here's what I've done with it. And let them know what you've done with it, not just, it's my first draft. I've seen a lot of first drafts. Most of them aren't very good. And that's okay. I can help a first draft person work towards that second draft, but that's not really going to get them towards the publishing route as quickly as they'd like to.
Does that help? Yeah, no, that is. That's brilliant. Okay, so I guess then the next question that would really help people is, what are the biggest issues that you find with manuscripts, and how can people, you know, stop those before they send them in?
Well, I note a lot of these on the website as I see them. And it's different for you know, every author has his own little quirks, his or her own quirks. And I think that some of the biggest ones for me are repetition, not necessarily of words, although you see that too. That's an easy one to solve, those kind of pet phrases or words that you just, you know, they're peppered throughout the whole manuscript. And I've seen this from new authors, seasoned authors. It's everybody has that. But I think a bigger issue, and it's related to that, is when you see repeated ideas or the way the writing is done. I'm not talking about a style thing where you may have a style that's consistent, the way you describe things, the words, kinds of words used. But in terms of, let's say you've got a character introduction, you introduce this character by describing the character's looks, all those little details. And each time you have a character appear on the scene, you use the same sort of approach. Well, that becomes monotonous to the reader. And there's a way to sort of allow context to define when you say things and when you don't. And I think what happens with a lot of the new readers is they fall into this pattern. Well, I need to describe a scene now, so I will go through this sort of checklist in my mind of how to describe all the things in the scene. Does it work? It feels very mechanical to me. It feels very, it loses some of the character. Now, again, we talked about voice, a writer's voice. That's sort of over time, you don't even notice it. Your voice sort of starts to erase those mistakes because your voice is allows your personality to flow into the words as well. So that's one of the things. I think I find people plot device or something. I see it where it repeats over and over again in the story. And so there's no growth to the story. Plot devices that send it sit there and like, okay, we saw this already. Here it is again. Here it is again. What's changing in the storyline? What's, you know, why am I interested in reading this more? It's just the same thing. It's like episodic, you know, it's like little short stories instead of a novel. Seen that a few times. Beyond that, you know, it's just the standard stuff. I think people who haven't taken the time to really learn how to write active voice as opposed to passive voice, which is a big one, learning how to show instead of tell them. We can go through that whole list of all those things that are kind of in the how to write well, and that's definitely something you see a lot. And the whole show versus tell thing, I don't think people really understand that until they sort of figure it out on their own. You can tell them, which is ironic, because of course you can't. That's telling them, but until they sort of get into the writing and write and realize, you know, I just wrote something where a character is telling me what he's going to do, and then he does it. When you look at that and you read it out loud, and you realize that's kind of redundant. I don't need to say all the stuff that's going on in this character's head and then have him do this action, because the action sort of tells me what he's thinking. Mm-hmm. And the response to that action that the other characters had, that tells me what was going on in his head. And that's when they start to really start cutting and become better writers. That's some of the stuff. There's other stuff too, but that's kind of the main stuff I see.
Yeah. And I guess following on from that, and it's another bit of a random question, but one that people keep asking me, is there an expectation of word count? And in terms of editing, you know, a lot of editing is making sense, you know, cutting out redundancy, as you say, cutting out repetition. If one actually did a lot of that with a lot of mainstream popular books, there wouldn't be much left. You know, I'm thinking of Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol, for example, which should have been at least a third shorter, I think, you know, than what it was. Is there a word count definition, and is that changing with the Kindle and ebooks, where it doesn't really matter how long the book is?
Yeah, I think there's an expectation of word count that publishers have. Traditional publishers have sort of their ranges, and you can find this online. A lot of different websites will tell you what the ranges are. You know, it's whether it's the 70 to 90,000 words for a contemporary novel of most kinds. That's kind of the sweet spot. But and certainly genre novels sometimes have a word count, whether it's a romance, where they might have a 50,000 word max for that. Or if you're looking at the, you know, the epic fantasy and you really need 100 to 150,000 words, well, then you need to write it. My advice for the word count thing is the same across the board, at least initially. And that is you write the story, you use the words you need to write the story. And if that's a 70,000 word story, and you're nervous because the publisher is looking for 90,000 word stories, I think you can look back at it. If you can make it grow without making it just flabby, mm-hmm. then you grow. Otherwise, it's a 70,000 word story. And if it's a great story, they're going to say, this is a great story. Mm-hmm. They will be flexible on those numbers, depending on how good the story is. I did work with an author recently on I've worked with four of his books, and they're all in this epic fantasy realm. And he had one manuscript that came in at 200,000 words.
Wow. Well,
the publisher, you know, the cost for too much to deal with the third book in the series, they're trying to, you know, manage all the costs of things. So he was commissioned, while I was commissioned with helping him trim about 80,000 words out of that story, which we did.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy to do, but we did it. The harder side is when you're short and you think, how do I make it grow? There was I think I put a blog post on recently about how to grow your novel.
Yeah.
You know, there's no easy way to do it, because if you feel like you've answered all the questions that your characters need to answer, the plot makes sense, and you're at 60,000 words, well, what are you going to do? Mm. It may be that's all it can be. Mm. In which case, then you hope that you find a publisher who's looking for a 60,000 word story, or you self-publish happily, and you do it yourself, whatever you want to do with that. But, you know, I get nervous when people start talking about having to fit to a certain guideline. Again, if a publisher has one, you have to do it. You have to find a way. But if that's what – I think naturally if you've written one or two books, you start to hit that mark, because you kind of know as you're writing, this feels about right. It's time for this to happen, now this. And you end up around 80,000 words and everything works fine. Mm. That's the ideal anyway.
No, that's great. Another question I have is, you know, does a writer have to execute all the changes that an editor suggests? Because, you know, I guess, you know, like I did, you know, paid for a review with the entire intention of doing what you told me. But then I probably did about 80-85% of what you suggested, feeling that some of it I just didn't want to go there. What do you think about that?
Well, that's absolutely the author's final decision in most cases. Now, again, if we're talking about traditional publishing, where a publisher says, these are the guidelines we've set for our writers, we want them to, you know, whether it's a genre or, for example, Christian publishing, whatever it is they're doing, they have sort of an expectation for writers and for the books. Mm. And the publisher may say, you know what, our editor asked you to make these changes, and we really think these changes need to be made for the book to be something we want to publish. In those cases, it's kind of the author making a decision, well, am I going to fight for this?
Yeah.
Am I going to, you know, die on this hill and potentially lose the contract for publishing this book? Or can I go ahead and make the change? But yeah, it's really up to the writer to accept or deny those changes. Mm. And in some cases, you know, the editor misses the mark. I mean, the editor says, I think it's this. I think this is what you meant. And this is certainly the direction I see it going. But maybe in your head, you have the missing piece that they don't. Mm. And when you go to the page to look at that change, you think, well, oh, I see what he's saying. But no, this was actually solved earlier. And maybe he just missed that. Or maybe it's something that you solved in other revisions you've done. I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at it. No, you don't have to make all the changes. But a publisher might step in and say, yeah, for us to publish this, you need to make this change. And you can do some negotiation there. It's not a cut and dried thing. Usually there's a space for the author to say, this is what I'd like to do. And the editor says, well, this is why I made these suggestions. And ultimately you come to an agreement on that. But it's the author's book. Mm. So the final analysis, when you say, this is my book, I need to write it this way. I appreciate the editorial guidance and the direction, but this is the story I need to tell. Then you go ahead and make those decisions.
Hmm. So do you see the partnership between, or is it a partnership between an editor and a writer? Is that how, I feel that's how it should be, but there seem to be a lot of myths around about relationships between authors and editors.
Oh, I think it varies from editor to editor, and also from publishing house to freelancers and all of those different things. The only way I can do this job is if it's a partnership. I don't want to do it any other way. And so, again, when I said the first thing I sit down and read the manuscript as a reader, my goal there is not just to see how the story is going, but it's also to get to know the writer. And if I, in communication with the writer, learn that they prefer to have day-to-day contact on this whole editing process, then I'll do it. Mm-hmm. If they say, no, you know what, I want you to send me your suggestions, I'll take care of them, and I'll send them back to you, we'll just wait until they're all done at once, then I'll do that. It really needs to be that sort of ebb and flow, or at least as much as, you know, an editor is able to do that, for it to be a collaboration. It's an interesting collaboration because really the editor is meant to be a guidance for the writer, someone who guides them to the best them they can be. And if they're doing it well, they are a significant voice in the process of the revisions, but invisible in the final page. In other words, it's the writer's book. So if I've done my job well, I've helped the writer define or refine their voice a little bit better, solve some problems they might not have seen, but ultimately they look better on the page. And I'm content to sort of be invisible in that.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. And I know we're running out of time, but I do have a question. Because when I got the editorial review back, there was sort of, you suggested something, changing the beginning of the book and changing one of the antagonist's sort of character, that meant that the rewrites flowed through the whole book.
It's
kind of daunting. It's almost like another rewrite where you have to pick up all the things that were related to that. Do you have any tips on ways people can do it other than literally just like starting again, but going through the whole manuscript? Any tips?
Well, in a case of a story like yours, and I think any other more complex plot, you're right. When you sort of pull one thread, the whole weaving could fall apart. And that's the challenge of sort of analyzing whether you want to do that, what the editor says. You say, is this really something I want to deal with here? And the question you have to ask yourself at that point is, if I make this change, is this change something that will really dramatically improve the book? Will it solve problems that otherwise are unsolvable? And if the answer is yes, then you really do have to decide, okay, I'm going to just dive into this. It's not going to be easy. And how you go about that, every book is a different story as far as how you would go about it. But if it's a character-driven story, of course, you would follow the character arcs all the way through. You might want to just follow a single character in your story and see what that's going to do to that character. Look at it and say, boy, I don't know, this changes the story so much, I can't really deal with that. Look for an alternative solution. Maybe there's some other way to answer the question that is posed by the editor's note. It may not be the only answer. Usually the editor is just giving you one or two possible solutions out of what could be dozens of solutions. So it may not be the only one. But it's kind of a daunting thing to get editorial notes back in any case, because you see all this red, on your manuscript, whether it's virtual or real. And you think, I thought I had a pretty good story. I thought I was done with this. And you may have. And the truth is, the bottom line is, some editors get it wrong. And we have to be able to say, did we miss your point? Did we miss the story? Are we trying to change it into something it's not? Hopefully that's not the case, but sometimes it happens. Sometimes on a small scale, sometimes on a big scale. I have run into some stories where an editor was really trying to solve a problem in a writer's novel. But ultimately what they were trying to do is sort of make the novel into the editor's voice. And, it might have been a fine novel, what they were trying to do with it, but it wasn't the writer's book. And so in that case, it just became a conflict. But yeah, you sort of dive in and say, is this change that's going to unravel everything worth all the work it's going to do to fix it? And in many cases, you'll find out, it's not as hard as you thought it was. Maybe that character that you need to change, maybe that gives you new opportunities you didn't see before, and all of a sudden the book is surprisingly better than you had anticipated. Again, that's sort of your call as the author. What's the best thing for you to do with your time?
And, I should say to the listeners, I did find what you told me, not told me to do, your review, I found very helpful. And the changes that I did make, although I was very grumpy, I think did work and definitely helped. So, and I didn't feel you were changing the story, you were making it better. So, that's feedback the other way.
Thank you. Well, I think the key for any editor to do their job well with that, again, is to understand, hopefully understand what that core story is. Not the trappings, not the specifics. I mean, those can be variables, because as you go through your revisions, you probably change things in the first to second draft and so forth. It's kind of the same process again. But if the editor sees your intent, that is this kind of emotional arc, this kind of story arc, this kind of discovery that's going on in the story, and they see that well, then the notes they give you will be simply an attempt to help you do that better. Give you an opportunity to fix some things that maybe didn't work.
Right, well, we're out of time. So thank you ever so much, Steve. Why don't you tell us where people can find you online?
Well, I hide online, but I'm at noveldoctor.com.
Yes, and you've got a brilliant site with some really good articles on, so I recommend people go over there. So thanks again, Steve, for your time. That was great.
Thanks, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!